Picture this. You're in the garage, hands covered in grease, just finished tuning up your engine with a part you found on eBay, and you realize, you know what? I could also use new brakes. So where do you go next? Back to eBay. You can find anything there. It's unreal. Wipers, headlights, even cold air intakes, it's all there. And you've got eBay Guaranteed Fit. You order a part, and if it doesn't fit, send it back. Simple as that. Look, DIY fixes can be major. Doesn't matter if it's just maintenance or a major mod. You got it, especially when things are guaranteed to fit. So when you dive into your next car project, start with eBay. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things people love.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, it's Sam. We've got a little bit different episode again this week because I am traveling to Omaha, Nebraska to take part in Operation Frodo. We're with about 16 or 17 other automotive journalists. We are going to be driving about 22 dogs rescued in Nebraska to their new forever homes in Portland, Oregon. Nicole is attending a wedding this weekend, and Robbie is taking care of some family stuff. So what we've got is a couple of segments and a couple of interviews. First off, I'm going to be talking with Robbie about GM's big announcement this week that they are stopping funding for Cruise and abandoning their efforts to develop robo-taxis and a robo-taxi business. And instead, they'll take a lot of the engineering resources from Cruise and fold that into their advanced driver assist and automated driving programs in-house for their consumer vehicles. And then after that, I'll be talking with Chad Kirchner about the new Dodge Charger Daytona, and then a couple of interviews with the CEO of Dodge and the chief engineer on the Charger. All that coming up next. All right. I'm here with Robbie now. This kind of a weird episode with a bunch of segments I'm stitching together. But I wanted to talk to you, Robbie, about what happened with Cruise this week, GM's big announcement.
Well, I mean, I've been saying this for a while. Robotaxis aren't going to be profitable for at least a decade. And GM threw about $10 billion at Cruise. And when you're looking at the thing is that, self-driving cars, robo-taxis, those look great, you know, for investors. The stock market really loves AI right now. But at the end of the day, when you're running an actual for real car company, and you have to decide, okay, are we going to continue to throw billions of dollars at this thing that is, you know, it's sort of tarnished our name at one point.
A little bit.
And it's driving around in within, you know, a confined area is fine, but it's not the promise of autonomous vehicles. It's not the promise of robo-taxis. And it's just really, really expensive. And there's a lot other, there's far more things that GM should be spending money on, to be honest. Their electrification strategy, they had a lot of issues with software. And, you know, $10 billion would have purchased a lot of really good developers, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, and it just last week, or it was last week or the week before, they announced a $5 billion write-off to reorganize their operations in China. You know, because one of the challenges that GM and a bunch of other non-Chinese automakers have had is, you know, they were doing great in China, generating some major profits in China. And then in the last 3-4 years, the market has just pivoted almost overnight, you know, where, you know, a lot of Chinese car buyers were happy to buy you know, Buicks and Cadillacs and Lincolns and BMWs and Mercedes and other non-Chinese brands, because, you know, they felt they were better than what the Chinese domestic companies were producing. And now, you know, with the big transition to EVs, and China, I think this year, most recent number I saw was that, you know, 46% of Chinese sales now are electric, or, you know, or electrified, you know, EREVs and EVs. And almost, you know, the vast majority of those are Chinese domestic brands, especially BYD. And so, you know, GM sales in China have dropped by half in the last 4 years. And so, you know, they're having to do major restructuring there. So they had a $5 billion write down. Plus, you got all the things that are going on here with electrification and all the uncertainty. And they just, they needed to look, you know, where can we stop burning so much money?
Yeah, I mean, you've sort of lost the Chinese market because, again, you, like you said, you know, everyone was buying those other, you know, cars from other companies because, you know, the Chinese cars just weren't there yet, and now they are, and they're there at a price point that's pretty compelling, and so they, you know, the company, especially Buick. Buick was essentially like ruled China for a while. It was like a surprise. People didn't realize Buick was still around. I'm like, oh no, Buick's still huge in China.
Yeah.
And now when
GM went through its Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 2009, you know, the people from, you know, the government, you know, that were involved in that reorganization process, you know, they came in and they said, you know, let's kill. You know, they were already decided, you know, killing Pontiac and Saturn and Hummer and all that, said, let's kill GMC and Buick as well. And then they took a look at the numbers and they realized that, you know, the average sale price for a GMC truck was $10,000 more than a Chevrolet truck, even though it was basically the same thing. And they said, oh, maybe we better keep GMC around.
Yeah.
And, you know, Buick, you know, even though they weren't selling very many cars here, they were selling, you know, at the time, 1.2 million a year in China. And last year, I think it was down to like 200,000, 250,000. Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's 250,000. It's kind of huge. But when you look at the Chinese market, you're like, oh.
Yeah. It's a 27 million, 28 million unit market this year. It's almost twice the size of the US market.
Yeah. So it's GM has to make tough decisions right now. Because it's still a company. They still have to make money. They still have to, you know, they still have shareholders that they have to deal with. They still have.
They got shares they got to buy back.
They got shares they got to buy back. And you have to deal with the uncertainty of a new, you know, administration that may change things. It might not change things. It might change things too much, which might change things just enough for them to be happy. It's just, there's a lot going on. And when you look at that and you look at, they're like, well, we have all these things that are making money. And then we have this giant thing that's over here that's not making money. Yeah. And Google has the, you know, with Waymo, Google makes a, you know, every time you Google something, they're making money off that.
Yeah. They've got other businesses that are printing money faster than the US government. So, you know, they can afford to subsidize Waymo for the foreseeable future. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens with the antitrust cases, but
yeah, but even if Waymo, like, let's say Waymo wins, it's not like that Google's not building cars.
No,
they're going to sell that software to everyone. And at that point, if Waymo wins, when we get to this point where there is a true robotaxi, which, by the way, I would like the idea of actual true for real robotaxis that can take people around, especially those who can't drive for whatever reason. But it's so far from now, and it's such an expensive question, you know, or it's such an expensive endeavor and problem to solve. And so when you're thinking about it as a company, when you're GM, again, when you're Mary Barra and you're looking at that, you're like, that's a lot of money. And we don't have anything after we've been promised, you know, we've been promised and we've been promising for years that we're going to be able to solve this problem, and we can't. And we know that we can't, because now we're looking at it and like, it's just going to be a lot of money for a long time. Why don't we stop paying for it, do what we do best, which is build cars. And then when the technology catches up, then we can either license it from someone or put people on it to sort of take what has happened in the world and do that. I mean, it's the same thing with EVs. I mean, a lot of people just sort of waiting and seeing until the hardware and the software and the battery technology caught up, and they're like, okay, now we can do it. You don't always have to be the people who do it. Let other people do it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when Ford decided to stop funding Argo 2 years ago, you know, they said, you know, we believe in this technology. We think this is ultimately going to work, but building an automated mobility service is something that is going to take many, many years and billions and billions of dollars in losses. And we've got to spend money on electrification. We got to spend money on other stuff. And, you know, we can't afford to burn these billions of dollars for the rest of the decade. And then, you know, they shut down Argo. Ford ended up hiring probably half of the engineers from Argo and brought them in, you know, created their Latitude AI division that is developing, you know, that's continuing to develop BlueCruise and developing level 3 systems for Ford consumer vehicles. And that's exactly what's happening now with Cruise, you know, with everything else. You know, GM, said, yeah, we're going to take a bunch of the engineers, roll them into our ADAS development teams, and we'll focus on advanced ADAS and automated driving for consumer vehicles. What's interesting, though, you know, back when the Argo announcement happened, you know, I said at the time and afterwards, you know, that, you know, there was a risk that GM would do the same thing to Cruise. And I think, you know, I think that risk is part of what happened to Cruise last year, why they suddenly started getting so much more aggressive in terms of trying to roll out driverless services, getting commercialized. Because I think, it seemed like Mary Barra was much more committed to the whole robo-taxi thing than Jim Farley was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I felt that she was not going to let Cruise, she was not going to shut down Cruise yet. She's going to be 65 in 2026, you know, and probably retiring. We don't know who the next CEO of General Motors is going to be. And there was always a significant likelihood that whoever Mary Barra's successor was not going to be as enthusiastic about Cruise as she was. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that Kyle Vogt, the co-founder of Cruise, former CEO of Cruise, probably felt that and figured, okay, we have to move fast now and establish our commercial business, start generating some serious revenues in the next couple of years, so that when Mary does step down, then whoever comes next, you know, looks at us and says, oh, okay, these guys are generating, you know, a couple of billion dollars a year in real revenue. They're still losing a ton of money, but they're generating significant revenue. Maybe this is something we stick with for a while. So I think he was trying to get it established to the point where you know, a successor, you know, would not pull the plug on it. But they moved too fast, put stuff out there before it was ready, and that's how you ended up with all the issues they had last year with the crash, you know, with the pedestrian that got dragged under the car. And, you know, so they took a lot of shortcuts. Mm-hmm. And now, as a result of that, they still end up back with the scenario that Kyle Vogt was originally afraid of.
Yeah, no, I think, and you know, I think he made a lot of, I mean, he introduced a lot of problems at Cruise, to be honest. And yeah. I think that the, you know, we both talked to him at one of their sort of open houses, and he was mm-hmm. not happy about our question.
No, definitely not.
And so it's, you know, it's one of those things where you're just like, okay, well, how do we deal with this situation? And, you know, the way that they decided to do under that leadership was just, you know, hide things and move fast and break things. And unfortunately they're breaking things on public streets,
people.
and included, yeah, and breaking people. And so, you know, that's not a thing you can, you should be doing on public streets. And, you know, rightfully, you know, they, that whole team was sort of dismantled, and Kyle, you know, was pushed out. And it's very funny that he tweeted that, you know, he's like, oh, the GMs are dummies. I'm like, really, dude, really? Is this what you, is this what you want to? All right, fine, whatever.
I mean, you know, it's, I think it, you know, it's a big part of it is the decisions that he made that led to the current situation.
Yeah. You know? So. No, it's definitely a lot of things that he did. But yeah, I think, you know, it's the right move right now for GM. Again, with a lot of uncertainty, and also, you know, their EV, they are finally on track to deliver the EV stuff that they wanted to. And the Lyric is a great car. The Equinox, you know, people love the Equinox.
I've got an Equinox in the driveway right now.
Yeah, and I think they are finally getting over that sort of hump. And I still think there's some issues with the infotainment system in these vehicles a little bit, but they're working towards it. And I would rather them deliver quality workmanship and quality development and quality software and quality hardware to people, to their end users, to their actual customers, than to keep funding something that's not going to make them money for a very, very long time. And when people will like, well, you know, EVs don't make money. I'm like, first of all, like, let's say the first year of the Bronco, that didn't make money because there's all this R&D. Everything doesn't make money initially. So every once in a while, you'll see like every Rivian costs, you know, every R1S costs Rivian like $10,000. I'm like, yeah, every first Ford Bronco probably costs $10,000 when you go into the marketing, the R&D, the work, the, you know, retooling a factory, of training people. I mean, no one makes money initially off of a car, regardless of whether or not it is a electric car or a gas car. There is a long time where you're just sort of trying to recoup your costs. So settle down. But at least they're selling EVs. You're not selling a robo-taxi. No one's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Elon wants to try, but we'll see. Well, I don't have much faith in that.
I mean, a lot of that is, I mean, to be honest, it's after having covered Elon and Tesla for years, it's very much like, hey, as a person who understands how the stock market works, he's very smart.
Yeah.
He understands like, oh, if I say this, then our stock will go up. And then, you know, if I say this, then our stock will go up. And so, you know, that's essentially what you're seeing a lot of at Tesla, when the reality is like, I would rather see Tesla improve their manufacturing, and I would rather see Tesla introduce a less expensive vehicle to the market. But that's that, you know, an inexpensive vehicle means lower margins, which shareholders are like, well, you're going to make less money to make this car. But if you tell everyone you're making a self-driving car and a taxi, here's a bunch of money to, yeah. So.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts on GM before I let you go?
No, I mean, I think I mean, it sucks for the people at Cruise. I'm sure there's a lot of people who work really hard. Hopefully they mm-hmm. all get jobs. You know, a lot of them get jobs at GM, and I hope a lot of them find jobs at other startups or maybe at Tesla or somewhere else, because, you know, this is a super, 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 super hard problem to solve. Yeah. It is not something easy. And people work really hard on this. And, you know, thank you for doing that, because I would still like this to be a reality. It's just such a hard problem to solve.
Yeah. The potential societal benefits are huge, you know, in terms of getting people around, you know, potentially, you know, long-term reducing the cost of transportation, giving people access to mobility who can't drive for whatever reason, and safety. You know, and 40,000 people a year die on the roads in the United States alone, you know, over 1.2 million globally. And if we can slash those numbers, you know, that those fatalities come with a huge societal cost in terms of, you know, the cost of, you know, healthcare, the cost to their families, the personal cost to their families, everything. And, you know, there's so much potential benefit, but we got to do it right. We can't screw it up.
Yeah, we got to, you know, do this right. And, but until then, you know, those folks that are working on it, you know, keep working on it. I mean, God, I hope none of those people, I hope everyone gets a job. I'm always sad when something has to get shut down just for the human cost of like people losing jobs, people like, oh no, you know, it's not just developers. There's a whole, you know, support staff, everything that's happening at Cruise. That's really tough for those folks. And, you know, that's always a huge, huge bummer, but hopefully they can put they'll get snatched up somewhere else.
Yep, absolutely. All right, thanks, Robbie. Take care.
Thanks.
Picture this. You're in the garage, hands covered in grease, just finished tuning up your engine with a part you found on eBay, and you realize, you know what? I could also use new brakes. So where do you go next? Back to eBay. You can find anything there. It's unreal. Wipers, headlights, even cold air intakes, it's all there. And you've got eBay Guaranteed Fit. You order a part, and if it doesn't fit, send it back. Simple as that. Look, DIY fixes can be major. Doesn't matter if it's just maintenance or a major mod. You got it. Especially when things are guaranteed to fit. So when you dive into your next car project, start with eBay. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things people love.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. Chad Kirchner, welcome back to Wheel Bearings.
Thanks, Sam, for having me. Appreciate it.
As I've explained, this is kind of an oddball episode this week. I'm pulling together a bunch of segments because everybody's off doing stuff this week and we can't really get together to record a regular episode.
But yeah, everybody's somewhere.
Well, I mean, tomorrow, as we're recording this about this time tomorrow, I should be on a plane heading to Omaha, Nebraska to drive a couple of dozen dogs across the country.
Oh, yes, that's right. It's that time of year.
Operation Frodo. We got 22 dogs that we're transporting this year.
Wow,
from Omaha to the West Coast.
Right.
So looking forward to that. But before I do that, I'm trying to put a show together for everybody because Nicole is she's at a wedding this weekend and Robbie's off taking care of some family stuff. So you just spent the morning you're in Phoenix driving something that I drove last Friday.
Yes.
Or Thursday. Whatever. Yeah, Thursday.
Whatever. Someday. I don't know. I don't even know what day today is, to be honest.
I know. I was in Munich earlier this week. I had like a quick turnaround. You know, I spent, I don't know, less than 48 hours in Munich.
Right.
Flew all the way there.
Charger, Daytona. Yeah. That is the
Dodge Charger Daytona.
The Doge Charger Daytona.
Oh, don't say that, please.
No, actually, no.
American E-Muscle, as Tim Kaniskis called it.
As American E-Muscle, though Tim Kaniskis is, I didn't have his return to Ram Trucks on my bingo card this year, but you know,
I don't think anybody did.
We're here in Phoenix at the Radford Racing School, which used to be Bob Bondurant's thing before he basically retired and was sold the place and whatever. And the reason why we're here is to do street and, believe it or not, track drives of the new electric Charger Daytona. So the Charger is the The Charger Daytona is the first of the replacements of the old Charger and Challenger, which I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, was based on a platform that more or less came out in 1998?
Somewhere in the late 90s, somewhere between 96 and 98. I'm not sure exactly which year. I think the first iteration might have come out as early as 96 or 97. Okay. And yeah, that LX platform is based at least in part on that that Mercedes platform, because at the time, you know, Chrysler was part of Daimler Chrysler. And so, you know, the folks in Germany allowed them to use some of their obsolete components. And it actually, as old as that platform was, it actually worked surprisingly well still.
I will say that they managed to really optimize. They used every part of the pig, excuse the the analogy, but like they really, and the thing was, like, even as the car got really old, it still drove well. You could still put some new stuff in it. The rear seats in the Charger, I think, was where you really kind of noticed that old platform, because you didn't have as much leg room as you would in, let's say, you know, a modern Camry or an Accord or things like that. I think that's kind of where you suffered, but really the driving experience has always been, at least I thought, has always been pretty solid. But this is all new. This is built on Stella Large, which is their multi-energy, full-size platform, modular, whatever, blah, 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 that is underpinning this. It's underpinning Wagoneer S. It's underpinning Recon, I believe.
And other stuff. Potentially another, to come.
Yeah, another stuff yet
maybe,
to come.
Maybe the entire new Chrysler lineup, if that ever appears.
Maybe. And this is a very different experience. And not just because there is electric motors instead of a Hellcat up front, but it is the first true, I'll say, high-performance Dodge Charger or Challenger that has all-wheel drive. They did all-wheel drive, of course, on V6 models in the old generations.
All wheel drive variants with V6s, but and also police cars.
The police version were, but still nothing with the 600 some horsepower that you can get on the Scat Pack here. So this is kind of like their first real high performance, mass produced all wheel drive.
At least as a Dodge. Yeah. Cause there was the Jeep Grand Cherokee Trackhawk with the Durango Hellcat was also
the Durango Hellcat. Yeah, so as a car, as either a sedan or a coupe for sure. And it also is it's Dodge's foray into trying to make an electric they're trying to answer the question of what an electric Dodge muscle car is. And I came into this drive with a big question mark because I don't know what that answer is. I'll defer you a little bit on it, but I also still kind of have a few question marks. Like I drove both versions of the car, so at launch, so showing up with dealers maybe before the end of the year if you live sort of close to Windsor. At launch, there's going to be an RT version with the stage one upgrade. And then there's going to be a Scat Pack that comes with the Stage 2 upgrade. And those are the two launch two doors. At the beginning of the next year, earliest next year, there'll be four-door versions of that. And then mid to late next year is the gas power, the Hurricane straight six with the 8-speed, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, not to like jump all the way to the end, but I like the car, but it didn't have as much fizz as maybe I'd hoped for. It's weird because my main question is almost sort of, who is this car for? Because the most anti-EV sort of people out there are the ones that kind of are big VA Dodge fans, or they're, you know, big gas guzzling truck kind of fans. And this is sort of like the antithesis of like all of that. Like, this is so different. It's quick. I mean, with the Scat Pack 2, with its power shot mode, it's like 660 horsepower, which, I mean, it's proper quick. I mean, all EVs are quick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's quicker than the Hellcat Red Eye Charger and Challenger were.
Yes.
You know, it's about 3/10 quicker to 60, even though it has less power and less torque than that Red Eye Hellcat had, and it's heavier. You know, in part because it's got that all wheel drive, it can actually put the power and the torque is instantaneous. So
except every time that I launched the car, I would spin the tires. So as this car kind of sits right now, at least today, it's still very tire limited in performance.
Were you driving? You haven't driven it on the track yet, right?
I haven't.
Yeah. So no. the street cars, at least, you know, when we were there last week, the street cars were on Goodyear all season tires. They were not on the summer tires. So the cars that are on the track and the drag strip and the drift, those are running on summer performance tires. So Goodyear Eagle F1 something.
That explains my lack of traction.
They actually have more grip. Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was a little bit temperature because it was a little bit cooler this morning. So I just thought maybe we didn't have enough temperature of the tires, but
yeah, that probably contributed as well.
And the biggest news is the Fradzonic exhaust. I'm doing air quotes. I know this is an audio podcast, so like air quotes don't work, but this Fradzonic chambered exhaust. So basically it's somewhere underneath the car. It's a speaker. Because at the end of the day, it's still computer
a speaker, generated. Well, a speaker and a resonance chamber to help amplify it and give it some.
And then it runs through some pipage, kind of some pipage for tuning, then out the back, I guess. Yeah. And it's Dodge's take on artificial sort of like engine enhancement kind of noise, which isn't new to EVs. They're definitely not the first person to try this. Well, they're the first person to maybe make as much of a deal out of it. And then the first ones to really spend a lot of time and effort into it. So if you start the car in its tracks, basically in its track setting with the Fradzonic turned on, that sort of initial startup sound is as loud as a Hellcat gas powered is as well. So it'll deliver something like near 100 decibels of loudness, and it is loud, and it always is there with you. It's not like a pedestrian warning chime that stops at 22 miles an hour or whatever. Like, this will live with you from when you start the car, you know, as
although
long as
you can go into the settings and actually turn that off.
You can. And I actually had a car that I didn't realize it was turned off on. I'm like, why is this car so quiet? And like, oh, it's because the Fradsonic's turned off. That's sort of like the couple of, that's the big thing that they're kind of, other than electrification itself, that's the big thing they're bragging about. And I think that takes, I think it's a good electric car. I think it's actually a good car. I'm not still entirely sold on the Fradzonic, which is why I'm kind of glad you can turn it off. Though I do tend to like artificial engine noises, artificial simulated noise when I'm driving sportingly, because I think a lot of people, if you've never driven if you're used to driving sports cars and you've never driven an EV, you kind of don't realize how much senses you lose when you can't really hear anything. Like, when you lose that kind of perceptual speed from having a gas powered engine.
I mean, we use, well, hopefully we're not using our sense of taste, but, you know, we're certainly using our other senses, touch, sound, vision, you know, when we're driving, especially when we're driving quickly. And, you know, that was the whole strategy behind the Ioniq 5N, the Hyundai Ioniq 5N, is to give you that feedback about what's going on, you know, so that, you know, even if you're not looking down at the fake tachometer, you know, you're still getting that feedback about what's happening. And, you know, there's a muscle memory connection between what you're hearing and what you're seeing and what you're feeling, you know, through the seat of your pants and your hands on the steering wheel, that, you know, especially when you're driving quickly, you know, can be helpful.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I almost feel blind isn't the right term because I can see, but like it really does feel like you're missing a T sense. And I don't feel as confident driving quickly down my favorite back road when I can't hear something. So I like this idea of having this artificial noise, however the automaker decides to tackle it, to sort of add that back in. I like that you can turn it off on the highway because I don't even on the highway, but I think it's important for that kind of back road, kind of sporty kind of drive. Mm-hmm. So I understand why they did it. I think it's okay. I think my biggest criticism sort of around it is this particular version of the car doesn't have the erupt two-speed transmission. So it's just a single gear. The SRT will have that. It kind of feels like on the highway, like if you're driving in sport mode, you take it out of sport mode. Like it kind of feels like you're just always driving a gear too low. Like you're in the way that it's geared, it kind of feels like you're always looking for a shift and the car will never shift. Mm-hmm. So if you're like 60 miles an hour, like we're, you know, you get out under the 10 is here and you get traffic and you're just kind of cruising along at 65, 70 and you're like, I need the car to shift and it won't shift.
Yeah.
And it's a weird feeling with the regen and stuff like that. So there's some things about that that I feel like some automakers maybe do a little bit better. If you're just in sort of the auto mode and especially if you turn the front sonic off, this is a very, very good highway cruiser, whether it's the RT version or whether it's the Scat Pack. Both are incredibly quiet at speed. Maybe I'm going deaf, but like I didn't notice any wind noise or
is really good. It was very quiet on the highway.
And I was
really impressed with, you know, with the refinement of the car.
Yeah. And if you accidentally strayed into speed limits that would get you arrested, it does a really good job at trying to do that thing that all German fast sedans do, which kind of feel like, oh, because they're designed to go on the Autobahn, it kind of feels like 80 miles an hour is too geesy. Like if you've driven like a fast German sedan, you know what I'm talking about. And this does a good job at trying to do that. Like it really does feel like a car that you can cover ground very quickly. And with the RT, that's 308 miles before charging. So that's a decent amount of range as well. It's still a big heavy car, but the Charger and Challengers have always been big heavy cars. So
this is bigger and heavier.
this is bigger.
It's 6 inches longer than the old Charger, and
it's wider than the old wide body is.
Yep.
It's something like half an inch narrower than the legal requirement to have auxiliary lights.
Yeah.
So like, you know, if your listeners are like, oh, the amber lights across the front of a Raptor for the vehicle, it has to have it because it's over, I think, 80 inches or whatever the FMVS is, 84 inches, whatever. If this is like within half an inch of that. So this car is very big. It's very wide. It feels very big. It feels very wide. I don't think it ever drives smaller than it is. But I never thought the old Challenger or Charger did either. Yeah. You can definitely ham fist it and have some fun with it. You can definitely, it's definitely an enjoyable experience. I think it needs a little bit more fizz, and I know that's going to be a really hard thing to describe, especially in audio. But like a lot of our colleagues have been kind of comparing the experience of driving the Ioniq 5N, and this isn't that car. First off, the Ioniq 5N is smaller, at least storage capacity and stuff wise. This is, you know, a different car for a different audience. But like that delivers with an electric platform that delivers so much charm and so much entertainment. And this car is entertaining, but I think it's missing something. And maybe the SRT solves that. Maybe when we get the Banshee, that solves that for me. But the Scat Pack Level 2 that I drove today has a sticker price because it had options on it at $83,000. That's i5 M60 money. That's
but it's also 10 grand or 10 grand less than the old wide body Hellcat,
right,
which was 93. So, you know, yes, it is expensive, but it's not as expensive, you know, as the old one.
But it's only, but it's right around the same price as a Model S long range, and a Plaid is not that much more. Not that I'm saying you should go back by Elon Musk's cars. Don't. But if you are looking for straight line performance, which is kind of what Dodge has sort of always kind of been, these cars will definitely do it. But there are some electric cars that are definitely quicker. Mm-hmm. So for not that much more money.
Yeah, I mean, Lucid Air, the yep. Model S, you know, even the Ioniq 5N is as quick as the Charger. And you know, to your comment about, you know, maybe needing a little more fizz, you know, I think, you know, maybe if they added in the sort of simulated shifting that you have on the Ioniq, that might be just that last little bit that you need. Because, you know, when going back to the sound, you know, one interesting detail is, you know, on the Ioniq 5N, that all that sound you hear is almost entirely on the inside. You don't really hear any of that on the outside of the car. Whereas in the Charger, you hear it inside and you hear it on the inside. So you can annoy your neighbors just as much.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yep.
But of course.
And that's kind of the Dodge ownership, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Like a Ford Mustang has a quiet startup mode because you like your neighbors. You buy a Charger because you don't like it.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm cool with that. Like, I kind of love the counterculture-y, in some ways, the counterculture-y, like, I almost cursed, sorry. But like the big, like flipping the middle finger to sort of normalcy and normal players and stuff like that. And I've always sort of like appreciated like how Dodge kind of tried to be that. And I think that they're trying to do that here. And I think it's a very good first attempt. I just think it needs a little tweaking. And honestly, like I think you kind of nailed it with just that simulated transmission. I think if it had just a little bit more of engagement that way, that type of experience brings, it probably would solve my major issue with it, which is just a little bit more of that is. And it's almost cliche to say this, but like,
at Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, you're saying they should make the car worse to make it better? And I say,
like basically,
the Ioniq 5 is quicker in its normal full EV, just normal driving kind of like mode, with its high power setting. You're slower when you use the simulated transmission because it's limiting torque to map out torque curves and things like that. It's slower. It's noticeable. It's so much more. And I think they should have done that here. And I think that would solve my issue there. And I'm hoping that when the SRT version, which as of now is still probably going to be called Banshee, as of 20 minutes ago, Matt said he's like the plan, then that will have a two-speed transmission. And hopefully that delivers, you know, kind of some of that experience back. The Taycan has that two-speed. It's not the same as obviously the simulated 8 that's in an Ioniq 5N, but it does add a little bit more of that kind of feel, I think, to the car.
But you know, the great thing about this is that all of that stuff in the Ioniq 5N is done in software, and the Charger already has paddles on the steering wheel that, under normal conditions, are used for tapping the regen up or down, which is the same as the Hyundai, and so you could easily throw in a software update with simulated shifting and use those same paddles just as you do on the Ioniq 5N. So you could do the same thing and you could give it different sounds. And I'm sure it's only a matter of time before we start seeing software update packs available through Mopar, you know, that enable all kinds of things, you know, all kinds of possibilities. You know, I think they've got the core of a really good car there.
Yes. And, oh, absolutely. This is for if certain other cars didn't exist and this was Dodge's first attempt at this, I think it'd be saying, oh, hey, it's brilliant. It's a very, very good first effort, honestly. And you kind of don't need to count the Fiat 500e. Like, this is the first Stellantis North America, like, real, like, electric car. And I think they're 90% of the way there. And there's some things I didn't even talk about. The space. It has a front trunk that's bigger than the EGMP cars. It's not quite as big as, like, a Tesla Model Y or a Mach-E, but still a good amount of space. And you have that lift back. There's so much. It's so practical to have a old giant hatch open in the back of your two-door coupe to throw stuff in, whether it's a new set of tires, you know, to go to the track with, which...
Well, that was the example they gave back in the early part of this year when they first showed us the car, is they said, you know, with the lift back, you can, you know, and you fold the back seats down, you can fit four tires in there, four wheels and tires. And so you can go to your track day, put your track tires in the back, or go to the drag strip, get there, you know, and put a jack in there, get there, swap out your tires to have your fun. And then when you're ready to go home, put your street tires back on, and all that stuff fits in the car. And it's, you know, pretty impressive.
And according to, I don't want to overstep on anything that you talked about, what you talked to Audrey about, but earlier I was asking her about track mode, because that limits your power by a decent amount, but it's designed so you can repeatedly do, you know, laps at a track with that. And she was saying she doesn't believe that it starts to derate at all performance much before 50%. So some EVs, like, really, like, especially Teslas, for the longest time, like, you got below like 90% state of charge, you start to notice your performance hit. So to know that they put some effort into it to, you know, make sure you could really go through a whole lapping session, whether it's a 20-minute session or 10 laps at X track or whatever, like, knowing that they have that thought process in there, I think is smart engineering. I still think this car is too heavy to go to a anything other than a drag strip. But that's me.
Yeah. I mean, it's nearly 3 tons. You know, it's like 5,800 pounds.
And
the reality is, you know, most people are not going to take this to a road circuit. You know, they're going to take it to the drag strip. And, you know, there's going to be more of these direct connection upgrade kits, you know, and of course, you know, the Banshee version that are going to be, you know, significantly quicker than this.
Yeah, that'll be 800 volt, that'll have a 2-speed transmission, so it'll have a much higher top speed. These are all limited to, or these all have a top speed of 135. I think it's the way they're geared. I don't think it's electronic limitation, but the Banshee should be fun. And, you know, it's still supposedly on target. So obviously there's a lot of concern. I was just looking at the Spunroni on this car I had earlier. 35 parts and cards content was from Mexico, and, you know, they're built in Windsor. So
the batteries are coming from Hungary, from a Samsung plant in Hungary.
So the tariffs are going to hit parts as they go one way, and then the tariffs are going to hit back, and it's, I'm putting my arms up in the air, shrugging. Sorry, listeners, but like I think that's kind of a big unknown right now that has nothing to do with the car.
Yeah, by the end of next year, probably they should start getting batteries from the Stellantis Samsung joint venture plant in Indiana. So that will help and should make it eligible for tax credits on a purchase. You can get the $7,500 now on a lease. And assuming that those tax credits don't disappear in the next 12 months, and, you know, once they have the U.S. built batteries, then that'll help as well.
If I were making an actual buy-in recommendation, I drive a lot of fast cars, drive a lot of fast EVs. Honestly, the Stage 1 RT is more than enough performance for most people. Mm-hmm. You know, check whatever options you want. Like, if you want the fancier seats, or if you want the carbon interior or whatever, like, check those boxes if you want them. But I don't, unless you have to have the fastest car on the block, you know, the fastest charger on the block, the RT, I think, is the best,
and
quote unquote value.
Is, you know, most people, you know, bought the Pentastar Chargers and Challengers before. You know, I mean, you heard from the Hellcat owners, but the reality is most people bought the Pentastar, or the base 5.7 V8.
And it should be worth noting that like this RT is quicker than, by far way quicker than those. Like this is, you know, you still get all of the good stuff because it's electric, and you still get the good looking aspect of the car. And I do think this car looks really good, especially in person. Photos don't necessarily do it justice, but the proportions I think in reality
looks awesome.
Yeah, the red looks great. I love that R-wing front end. I think I love that more than any other design element of the car. And like I said at the very beginning, this is their first like all new version of this car, so the interior is like, in a lot of ways, makes sense. Like it feels modern, and they had an opportunity to do some interesting design things. Still kind of feels like a normal car, but like they've really had a real blank slate to go with, a real clean street sheet to go with, and outside of, you know, pedestrian safety standards and things like that, like this car looks pretty wild in a way that I think Dodge wanted. And mm-hmm. I think that if you looked at the concept and you're like, there's no way they could do that. Yeah, they did. This looks
it's exactly just the same.
Yes.
One thing you didn't mention I'd like to hear your thoughts on is, you know, driving up the mountain, up South Mountain.
Yes.
I drove up there. You know, this is a tight, twisting mountain road. You know, mm-hmm. very few, you know, straightaways of any notable length, and a lot of blind corners. I'm curious what you thought about that.
It's a big car. Like that particular road, the corner, the turns themselves are similar to other mountain passes that I'm sure a lot of people have driven on, or some people have driven on for sure. But it was a very narrow path, and it's hard to this car is very wide, and you don't ever forget that this car is very wide. So I think it handled it reasonably well. Like we said, we were in the Scat Pack with the track pack, so we had the fancy suspension and the meta brakes and all of that. And I think it was competent at doing it. It was definitely more competent than any of the gas powered cars from Dodge that I've driven doing that. And I never get bored of like an instant power out of it. Like you never have to wait. So even if you screw the corner up, you can easily fix your mistake by just hitting the go pedal. It's not my cup of tea in this car. I think I would rather be in something smaller, whether it's a dedicated sports car like a Miata or a BRZ or something like that, or even something that, I mean, even the Ioniq 5N feels smaller than this because it is narrower. I think that's better suited for this particular narrow kind of pass. I think if you're on a mountain road that maybe was a little bit wider with more sweepers and longer straights, I think you could have a lot of fun in this car. But the real tight, narrow, it's a good Miata road.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And I mean, it's a good Miata road.
Yeah.
This isn't a Miata.
Yeah. I mean, it is like you say, it's a big car. It doesn't feel as heavy as it is, which, you know, a lot of that is due to a lot of that weight being down low because of the battery under the floor.
Yeah, this is their best weight distribution
But, you know, I mean, obviously the width is a challenge on a road like that, you know, especially because, you know, it's like almost, you know, every other corner is a blind corner. And so you do have to take care to make sure you don't cross over the line and stay in your lane. And, you know, I mean, there were, at least on the day we were there, there were quite a few cyclists going up and down as well. Yes. And the only real dynamic issue I had with it was the steering. You know, the steering, is precise, but it has no real feel to it. No. Even you put it in sport mode, you know, track mode, it's a little better, but not much. And so, you know, there's not really any steering feedback, but aside from that, the rest of it, you know, it behaves really well as long as you take care to stay within the lane.
Yeah. And if you do sort of have to do kind of a more of a handover, like kind of a turn, like if they're a really sharp turn, I don't necessarily care for the squircle either. Yeah. I think in normal driving, the squircle is fine, but on a really tight, tight churning like road like that, I think I'd rather have a round wheel.
Yeah.
I know that's kind of a maybe a old fashioned line of thought, but you know, a actual steering wheel wouldn't be so bad. But I think in normal driving, squirrel's fine. Other than in my driving position,
it's not as extreme as what you find on, you know, like the Cybertruck or you know something, sure. Something like that.
Though I will say, in my driving position with the steering squircle where I want it, I have a hard time seeing parts of the instrument cluster.
Oh, okay.
So it actually kind of blocked some of the, like the turn signal indicator, for example. I'm kind of looking down once to see if it was still on. One thing that I haven't talked about that I absolutely love is they have the optional blind spot view camera thing. So if you get the surround view camera set up, mm-hmm. when you turn on your indicator, either left or right, a pop up on the screen, that blind spot view. And I like the way Hyundai does it better. Hyundai and Kia and Genesis, I like the way they do it better, is they put it in the instrument cluster on either the left or the right side of the cluster. But I love having that extra visibility, because this car doesn't have a kind of has a blind spot, you know, back in the rear three quarter.
Overall, it's pretty good visibility, though. But
it is.
But yeah,
it is. And the front drops off pretty well, too. Like,
yeah.
The hood's long, but because of that R-Week design, it's really kind of dumps off the front, almost kind of 911-ish in some ways. But yeah, it's I love that feature. I want every automaker to have it. I'd rather have it in the cluster, but I'd like having it. And that's a cool. I mean, I'm glad that Lamco has it available, and I look forward to seeing it on more cars. So if I were going to start on Monday today, I would get some bright colored version of the RT, probably is what I would do, or wait for the Banshee, which would probably be 100 grams. I don't know, and I'm sure there's people that are super excited for the gas version. I've driven the truck with the Hurricane in it. I like it. I don't know how that's going to translate the car.
Yeah, because we'll find out. I mean, I suppose. You know, the car is, you know, it'll you know the six cylinder car will probably be close to 1,000 pounds lighter than the Daytona. So you know that's going to put it, you know, somewhere 4,900 pound range. So not light, but you know, lighter than a Ram 1500. So it should, you know, I'm sure it'll be fine. But you know, I think for me, you know, the story that I wrote up for the Autopian, you know, the way I ended it up is like, you know, even if you are a V8 fan, and I'm a fan of V8 engines, I love the way they sound and feel.
Same.
Set aside your preconceptions, take one for a test drive, you know, and then decide, you know, if you like it or not. Because I think for a lot of people, they will like it.
And this may be a lot of people's first EVs too. Mm-hmm. For those listening, like, don't necessarily view my criticism as being like all of these things are deal breakers. It's just you and I, fortunately with what we do, we have a certain context that a lot of people, you know, don't have. And we also have personal preferences that, you know, maybe vary from person to person. And this is a very good looking, very quick car. Like I said, I do think I wish it was the gear exchange thing. I wish it did it, but I wish I could do a burnout. I can't do a burnout. All wheel drive doesn't really make that
easy. You put it in drift mode, you can.
Okay, they will do a full.
When you put it in drift mode, it actually turns off the front motor, so it's rear. It becomes rear wheel drive.
And then I can just put my foot on the brake and like do a real, like need a new set of tires burnout.
Oh yeah. They went through a lot of sets of tires last week when
we were doing the afternoon session
on the pad there with the drift mode.
I am going to have to go try that then, because I want to be able to do that, because that's a cool thing about a muscle car is being able to waste money on tires.
Yeah. And when you put it in drift mode and you will simply shred those rear tires.
My favorite brand of tire, I don't know if anybody knows this, is the Not My Tire brand.
Those are the best kind.
They are.
Somebody else is paying for them. That's the best. Somebody else is,
they're the best tires. They're so amazing. I think that it's an interesting car. It's definitely an interesting car. And I think that I don't know if a Hellcat buyer is going to be like, oh, I need to have this. But you brought it up. Matt brought it up earlier. There's a lot of V6 buyers out there. And they're going to drive this thing. Their minds are going to melt because it's going to be so much performance and so much just good experience. And I think
I sat in the back seat of that thing. And, you know, there's a lot of room back there.
Yeah, there's four extra inches of knee room leg room than in the outgoing Charger, and cargo space capacity. This has 133% more space than the outgoing Charger.
Yeah.
So,
and it's usable because of the lift back as opposed to the tiny trunk opening that the old Charger had.
As a family car, this is interesting.
You know, I was driving with Mike Sutton from Car and Driver. And he came up with an interesting way of describing it, that this is really more of an alternative to the SUV coupes, you know, like an XM or something like that.
Yes.
As opposed to necessarily just being a pure coupe or sedan, you know. And if you look at, because, you know, you do sit a little bit higher than you do in the old Charger Challenger because you've got the battery in there. And, you know, so you've got some of that slightly higher H point that you get in a lot of crossovers. And if from that perspective, you know, it makes a very interesting family hauler.
And if you don't spec the sport seats, if you just get the normal seats, it's super easy to get in and out of the sport seats. Cause I'm fat, kind of are a little bit more difficult. I still like them, but the regular seats, especially again with that little bit higher H point, it's excellent. No, I think that's a great, like, this is like, I like that a lot because I don't like crossover coupes at all. Mm-hmm. They're stupid. And this, because it's a, you know, because it's an entirely new platform, they can do clever things like that. So I think this makes it a good family car with over 300 miles of range in the RT. I think it's a pretty solid EV. Yes, it's only 400 volt PPC charge rate isn't as much as on maybe like the Hyundai, but most people are charging at home anyways, and that's really what you should do. The biggest criticisms, like on the EV specific part is it's launching with a CCS charger or CCS connector. And that 400 volt charging architecture just isn't as quick to charge. I think it peaks it. I don't remember what the peak charge rate was.
They were saying that they've seen, you know, between 220 and 240.
Okay. So that's
kilowatts. That's about what you get, you know, with the Hyundais and Kias.
Yeah.
With 800.
235 out of those. Yeah. And
we'll see how long it can actually sustain that charge rate. But, you know, I think they're officially saying like 20 to 80% charge in about 24 minutes.
I hate that they use 20 to 80%.
I know.
It's 10, just do 10. Yeah. Do 10. They're like, well, why not do 20? I'm like, because 10 is better.
Yeah.
Did they quote you at all? Because the actual usable size of the pack, because they were.
Saying is 100.5 kilowatt hours.
Okay. I heard somebody say 93 or 94 usable at some point.
Yeah,
I think as an EV, I think it's competent. And I wouldn't even balk too much at that range difference with the i4, with the Scat Pack Stage 2, because that i5 M60 that I had recently, also at 240 miles of range.
Yeah.
So, like, I think high performance EVs
and
outside of like Plaid is, that's kind of the range you get.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll see, you know, how conservative they're being on those numbers. I mean, it may turn out that, you know, real world numbers may be a little better than that.
I need to harass our friend Kristen to make sure I can get one soon so I can actually charge test it and,
yeah,
range test it and stuff like that. So, but overall, it's fun.
Yeah.
And I think it's
awesome.
You know, what was your 2 second take?
I don't necessarily want a car that big, but, you know, if I needed a big, you know, 4-5 passenger car, that I wanted to have a lot of fun with, this would probably be the one. You know, I mean, I love the way it looks. I thought, you know, aside from the steering feel, I thought that it drives great. It was a lot of fun on the track. It was a lot of fun to drift it, especially with, you know, that particular brand of somebody else's tires.
Yeah, it's the best brand.
Yeah. You know, so it was, I liked it a lot. You know, the only kind of complaint I had about the interior was just that panel of the HVAC controls right below the center touchscreen feels kind of deep. Yeah. And feels, because the rest of the interior is so nice, especially
yep.
with the textured door panels and the ambient lighting on there. It looks so good. You know, that one little thing stand out so much, but it's, you know, not a deal breaker.
One other thing I noticed, and I'm going to spoil people with it now too, is that they clearly weren't with the same headliner supplier as in the old car, because it still kind of has that a little bit cheap kind of feel, like scruffiness to it. Like it looks and feels just like the old headliner in the old car, which is fine. I don't care. But there's some areas that at least kind of feel a little sus. That panel is, I like the real button. Like I appreciate there's a real button for changing the climate and stuff. But yeah. But overall, my picking is very knit. It's not, you know.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to spending more time with one, you know, when they get them back here in the Detroit fleet, and hopefully, you know, when it's a little bit warmer out.
Yeah. I mean, it was 70. It's 67 now. Then it was 15 when I got on the plane yesterday. So
yeah, well, it was like 17 this morning when I walked the dogs. So
I was kind of hoping I can stay here. Maybe I can stay here. All right. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for taking the time, Chad. Appreciate it. And
thank you.
And enjoy the sun and go shred some tires.
I plan on it. For sure. Right.
Bye. Next up is a conversation with Matt McAleer, the CEO of the Dodge brand at Stellantis.
Yeah, remember. All right, Matt McAleer. This is the first fully electric Dodge. It's the first American e-muscle car. How do you feel about how this car turned out?
I couldn't be happier with how it turned out. I think, you know, we set out with the four golden rules. It had to look like a Dodge, had to feel like a Dodge, had to drive like a Dodge, and it had to sound like a Dodge. And quite frankly, the designers, the engineering team, it came together incredible, in my opinion. But I think the best part is it's not an EV. It's a better muscle car. It just happens to have an EV powertrain for these two trims. But it's also going to have ICE powertrains. This is a true multi-energy lineup, and we're using electrification to enable better performance than we saw in our outgoing muscle cars, which is exciting.
There's obviously been a lot of consternation from fans of the Hellcat about, you know, despite the fact that this car is quicker and has a lot of advantages, the fact that it doesn't have a V8 in it. How do you convince those people?
You know, I think it's going to take time. I think as they start to see them on the streets, as they start to
lose them at the drag strip,
see one down the street, see one, at the office, see one in the school parking lot or pull up in the line, they're going to be intrigued. They're going to be like, maybe I need to go test drive one. Maybe they go into the dealership for an oil change. Maybe they take one out for an hour for a spin. Seeing it in person, hearing it in person, and actually driving it is so much different than anything that you can experience over the internet or any other forms of media. I think, you know, every place we take this vehicle, the reaction is overwhelming. People say, well, I didn't realize. I that's not what I was expecting. You truly just need to give a chance to get behind the wheel. But for those that aren't quite ready for technology, we have the ICE powertrains coming. We have some phenomenal inline sixes coming with up to 550 horsepower. But at the end of the day, if they want the quicker 0-60, if they want to outperform the Hellcat Red Eye wide body that they had last year, they better give the Scat Pack a chance.
Is Dodge actively doing any sort of programs to try to bring those people in, the skeptics, you know, and get them to drive you know, to, because I agree, you know, once you get behind the wheel and you experience it firsthand, you know, it's a very different thing than, you know, reading the stories about it. And so are you doing anything to, you know, any sort of programs or anything for the consumers, for the owners of Hellcats?
Yeah, so, well, one of the things we're going to do is, here we're at the Radford Racing School today, we're going to start interjecting these battery powertrain vehicles into the fleet down here for people to come to this school and experience it. We're also working with our dealer body to put them into their courtesy transportation program so that when they do come in for an oil change or a service appointment on their current generation vehicle, they could take one out, they can experience it. But they can also go in and test drive one at different dealerships. And then we're also working on a multi-city tour in the first quarter next year, where we're going to go out and do not only dealer sales training, but consumer events in the EV. So we open the minds. We've partnered and taken it to different EV drive events throughout the country. So it's a multi-prong approach of just opening people's eyes and getting them willing to get behind the wheel.
For, you know, I'm sure you've had some consumers already, you know, that you, oh, I would assume you've had some, that, you know, that have had a chance to experience it. Have you seen those people change their opinion once they try it out?
You know, this is actually where we're down here today. You guys are the first to truly drive this vehicle outside of employees. We've had them in the employee fleet now for a couple months, and I've had one, and I've taken so many people for rides that just being in the vehicle has changed their perception and mindset. You know, it's amazing. You park it in the parking lot, you run into the store, you come back out, and there's four or five people gathered around it, taking pictures and want to talk about it. Taking it to Cars and Coffee, and you pull in, and it's just swarm of people coming around, contemplating, asking questions, rationalizing the electric powertrain. And I think, you know, I heard it from one gentleman at a Cars and Coffee, and it really hit home. And he was a Durango Hellcat owner, and I looked at him, and he's looking at it, and we talked about it for a while, and he said, you know what? He said, just because I love my Hellcat doesn't mean I can't love this also. You have a son and a daughter, completely different, but you love them both. We're not telling people to fall out of love with their old powertrains or their old performance. We're just telling them to open their mind to what different technology can bring to the market that maybe they didn't even realize they wanted yet.
Stepping back a little bit, you know, for the Dodge brand, I mean, right now you got Durango, you got Hornet, now you got the Charger coming into the lineup. What's your vision for the Dodge brand going forward? You know, what does the lineup start to look like?
Well, at the heart, we're staying core to our DNA. We set out about 10 years ago to be America's performance brand, and that's not changed. You know, you fast forward a year from now, and you'll have the two-door and the four-door on the showroom floor, and both of these powertrains, the RT and the Scat Pack. We'll have the two six-pack, the standard output and the high output. So we'll have ICE models. We'll have BEV models. We'll plug in hybrid electric on the Hornet. We'll still have the Durango. We want to offer things that are different in the marketplace, things that customers don't necessarily need, but they want. They want something bold, brash, audacious, that kind of stands out, whether or not it's bright colors or Frasonic chamber or V8 exhaust. We've always said, you know, we don't want to be everything to everybody. We know exactly who we are. We're okay if most of the buying public thinks we're a little crazy, we're a little out there. That's where we win, when we're different. Our job is to not bring commodities to market, but truly bring passion, passionate vehicles that people want.
Earlier we were talking about, you know, the Frasonic exhaust and some of the possibilities. Do you think we'll start seeing the things from Mopar, that other alternatives to what the sound you get from the factory?
Well, I think if history is anything, and you look back over the last 10 years of Charger and Challenger, we've continued to evolve. We continued to change up our powertrain lineups and bring fresh new things to market. I don't think that's gonna be any different with this vehicle. This opens up a whole new line of opportunities that we can do, and we're just getting started. I mean, these are just the first two powertrains to come. We've got more coming next year, and as you said, who knows where we go with different things like Frasonic and other different things that we're looking at.
Okay. Anything else about Dodge that you think people should be thinking about?
Well, I think, you know, specifically with this vehicle, you know, historically, we've sold more V6s than we have V8s. People associate Dodge with performance only, but it's also, performance can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. And but these vehicles, every single one of them is a wide body. Wide body is no longer an option. Every single one is a standard all-wheel drive. This opens up different places of the country that maybe, you know, hadn't necessarily looked at a Charger or a Challenger in the past as a daily driver, and now they can't. This has UV-like capability in its hidden hatch design with standard all-wheel drive, that this can be a great daily driver. And I think that's what's exciting, is that we don't have to appeal to only the market and the customers we had before. We can start talking to a bigger audience.
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, that the hatchback, you know, the liftback design, I think, you know, definitely brings up some interesting opportunities. And last spring when you had the backgrounder, I think one of the things that was brought up was, you know, you fold the back seats down, there's enough room in there to put four wheels of track tires in there. You know, go to the track, swap out your wheels and tires, spend your day at the track, and then when you're done, put your street tires back on. You know, that kind of utility is something you could never do with the Challenger or the old Charger.
Yeah, it does. It brings up a whole lot of opportunity we haven't had in the past, which I'm excited about.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And finally, I've got Audrey Moore, the chief engineer for the Dodge Charger Daytona.
All right, Audrey Moore, you are the chief engineer for North American sedan platforms.
Yep.
So that obviously includes the new Charger.
Yeah.
So when did the work start on the Stella Large platform?
It was a little over 3 years ago where we started that work for the platform.
And you know, was the decision made right from day one to make this a multi-energy platform to go with a flexible architecture like this?
Yeah, the concept really began talking about, you know, Stellantis' Dare Forward 2030.
Yeah.
And then the best way to balance all of the portfolio and the mixes. And that kind of just led right into the multi-energy discussion. And then the development of, you know, picking which versions and how would we want to do it. And then obviously tailored into the Dodge piece with the, you know, the true ICE combinations of the HO and SO, and then adding in the electrification to go along with it.
Yeah, back when they did the EV Day in 2021, when Tim Kaniskas showed that first shadowy teaser image of of the car, you know, and all we saw really was the Fratzog, and he used the phrase, you know, we're not building EVs, we're building American e-muscle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of trying to build an e-muscle car, an electric muscle car, what, you know, kind of what was the driving force for your team in doing that?
You know, it came from so many different places, because you have to look at where we have been recently, right? With the Hellcats and the Demons and the Red Eyes. And you look at, what do people love about them? What makes it a muscle car? And so, you really do go back to the basics of what Tim and the history is developed and built, right? It looks a certain way. It feels, drives, and sounds a certain way. And then we did sit down and then basically say, we have to deliver at that at a minimum, right? You have to give the customer what they're looking for. And we're just adding in electrification now into the mix. And then how much more awesome things can you give to the customer in the process? The big thing for us and me as we were starting this, though, is you look out at electrified vehicles, a lot of them in the marketplace, they distinctly make themselves electrified, right? They look electrified, they make the vehicle look electrified, and it's got a different feel to them, you know, vehicle screens and different things. This car, we wanted to make it's got a history, right? We wanted to make it like a muscle car, and then we're just adding electrification. That's why the cockpit, the interior, right? The driver-centric cockpit, the things that people love to have, the ability and flexibility, you know, with the radio screens and then the track mapping. So it kind of then evolved from that, but you stuck with the core basics to it and then added on.
When people think of a muscle car, it's something different from, say, a sports car. Traditionally, you know, muscle cars have been bigger, brawnier, obviously very quick, long, in the 60s and 70s, not necessarily the greatest handling cars, But then again, neither were sports cars at the time, so there's that. But, you know, what, I guess, what were you, what kind of feel were you trying to give this car? Did you want it, even though it's a big car, and it's significantly bigger than the last generation Charger, what did you want it to really feel like?
It needed to give exactly that personality that everybody expects from him, right? You know, that you used to pull up to the Hellcats or the other, like you hear them, you know, hear the rumble, right? You feel the rumble. You get into the car and then all of a sudden your 0-60 is there. You can pedal down to the metal, right? If you want to, and you can go as fast as you want. You get it. You grab the attention that you want from everyone. And that's exactly what you got to do, right? 0-60 in 3.3 seconds, right? Faster than what we've had before. You've got the handling, you've got the traction. We put the biggest offset wheels and tires, right, to get that actual maximum tire patch to the ground. So it's like we did everything that a muscle car, like a true Dodge muscle car needed, and then we just made it bigger and better.
Yeah. With in designing the propulsion system for this thing, the electric motors, the power electronics and everything, did you do anything different or unique in developing that? Was there anything that you were trying to tackle, you know, looking at the rest of the EV industry? Was there anything that you did specifically different or unique for this platform and particularly for this car to make sure that it delivered what customers, you know, the people that were used to Hellcats would expect?
You know, the 0-60 performance is obviously a big one. Quarter mile, right? You got to be able, and in the drag racing, the ability and that the raw, like, and I hate to say use the word raw, but it's really true, that true electrified power being so quick at your fingertips, right? That is a huge piece to this. But then you also look at from utilizing as maximum of that from the EDM as you can, right, to get that. But then it's like you also have to consider, and a lot of the electrified vehicles don't, we still have to do track, right? In 10 minutes at the track, what, you know, our metrics for that to be able to drive that car over long term, full throttle, braking. So we had to.
Yeah, because one of the challenges with an EV is cooling the motors, cooling the battery and the electronics.
So you had to consider both ends of the spectrum, like the short term burst versus the long term, you know, driving piece of it. And then as usual, just like the other muscle cars, you go right from the track and then you go right onto the road and you can drive home, right? So it's, but there was that added play into it that a lot of the other, you know, electrified cars, you know, there's still a few out there that are trying to be the track performance type, but there's not a lot that have to consider that.
What you refer to as the EDM, the electric drive module, that is combining the motor, the gear set, and also the electronics, the power electronics, all as part of that.
Three in one. Yep.
Okay. And for cooling of that, is that liquid cooled, oil cooled? How do you manage the thermals on that?
It's liquid cooled, so we have the coolant system that goes through that. So it's a complicated electronic system, our coolant system for the vehicle. And then we also have, you know, from a battery cooling, we also have, like, from a motor and battery side, we have the preconditioning, right? So you have to still do all the things that people think for an electrified vehicle, because it's like you have to be able to do the race prep, right? So you're prepping the batteries and such. And then you've also got to do the cabin conditioning pieces, right? So you got to warm it up for those cold Michigan winters like we're having right now, right? So it's like, yes, you have to do all of those different things.
So for the track modes or the drag modes, do you have to wait a little bit to get the battery up to the optimal temperature before you do a launch? Is that
part? You don't have to, but there's a race prep to make certain that it's optimized so that you get the best performance, right? You can go out and do it. It's just that, you know, you get the best performance when it's prepped to the right parameter.
And how long does that process typically take?
The race prep. I'm trying to remember the last time I ran it. I think it was only just a few minutes, about 5 minutes or so. Okay. Yeah.
The battery itself, you mentioned the Samsung SDI cells in there, so prismatic can cells.
Yep.
Is that an NMC chemistry and nickel manganese cobalt? Anything unique or different that you've done there, or, you know, is that similar to, I think the Jeep 4xEs, they use the Samsung batteries too, right?
I don't know the 4xEs. I don't work on the Jeep stuff very much. I apologize. I can't answer that.
Okay.
Nothing crazy about the battery itself. We took, you know, the Samsung modules. We're getting them from Hungary to start with. We're putting the packs together. You know, from our perspective, it was just making certain from a battery design that the way that it bolts to the vehicle that, you know, the floor pan itself, you have to make certain that you can bolt the battery, get it up off the ground, and make certain that you're clear for the muscle car. But then you also have to have the tunnel in order to make certain you can run the exhaust and you know, drive shafts down. And so that design piece of it, there wasn't anything specifically unique to the modules per se.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed, you know, in the backseat, you know, obviously, you know, as a flexible platform, it does still have that tunnel there for the drive shaft. And actually, that looks like the packaging's pretty good. You know, it's not as huge as it is in some other cars. Yeah, like some of the BMWs, the tunnel is actually quite a bit larger than what you see here. So
yeah,
like the overall packaging of this vehicle is quite impressive. You know, in terms of the interior volume, one of the things you mentioned during the presentation earlier was the stiffness of the body in white, significantly stiffer than before. You know, both even with and without the battery in place, and benefits of that, I think, you know, really gives you more flexibility in terms of, well, among other things, give you flexibility in terms of chassis tuning, right? Suspension tuning, so you can.
Yeah, it really does. You know, from a body torsional perspective, just, you know, that rigidity piece, podcast, you know, the amazing thing about this, both the two-door and the four-door are frameless doors, right? So you're balancing to make certain that body structure, it manages that with the frameless doors. And then, you know, with that stiffness, right, you can then actually take that flexibility, right? And now that the suspension works a little bit different with the harmoniousness of the body. And yeah, so we have a little bit more flexibility, but we can get that stiffness, right, for track performance. So you're planted on the road. It's a little wider. We got the bigger tires and then the chassis with the active dual valve damping, right? So it's just like that whole system now works a little bit better, and it's fantastic on the track.
And being able to achieve that while also doing the lift back, you know, having that giant opening in the back, that adds to that challenge.
Yeah, that was an interesting piece of the development, not only just for, you know, your NBH pieces of the puzzle, you know, like the boom and the, you know, the different pieces there. But yeah, that whole surround there, and then with the glass roof, right? Because it's an open structure. So then you have
that can start resonating.
Yep. So then, and there's no actual cross beams there. So it was a great engineering adventure for us to you know, kind of get that dialed all in to achieve all the objectives, right? It's got to be quiet on the inside, seal well, and, you know, no boom or anything else. So
anything special or unique in the body structure in terms of material use, or pretty standard mix of various grades of steels and aluminum and things like that?
Yeah, it's pretty much a similar mix of the same things we do on other cars. We did have, you know, in the B pillar section, we added high strength steels, a lot of that, and some structural inserts, because you do need to be able to make certain that for, you know, our safety requirements, roof crush and some of the others, that you have enough structure in that B pillar there, just because you don't have the door frame. So yeah, there's some structural inserts there and some good high strength in that whole area.
Overall, what would you say were the biggest challenges team had in developing this vehicle?
Oh, the biggest challenge. You know, I don't know that I would call it a challenge, but this was the first time, like, the Fretzonic chambered exhaust. That was probably the funnest part of this. It was because you knew we wanted sound, right? We knew it needed to resonate and needed to balance. And it wasn't just like push play and something comes out of the back of the car. You know, we really wanted it to turn into something that was integrated into the car, right? So that it's, you know, you hit the throttle and it makes noise, right? You turn it on and off, you make noise. But it's like engine, RPM, everything, it all moves together to create the sound. So it's a dynamic driving experience with the Fretzonic chamber. So I don't know that I would call it a challenge, but it definitely gave us probably one of the funnest parts of developing the car. And then, of course, picking the sounds, which were just, yeah, you know, that was fun.
At what point in the program was the decision made to include the
Fretzonic? It was from the beginning.
Okay.
All from the beginning. They started it from the beginning. Had to sound like a Dodge.
Was there ever any thought to also incorporating simulated shifting as part of that?
Well, it's been talked about, yes. Can't talk about future project if there is one. I don't know. But yeah, we talked about it. Absolutely.
Okay. I guess, yeah, you mentioned the Fretzonic exhaust. Anything else that you would call maybe your biggest achievement, your favorite achievement, you know, in creating this vehicle?
You know, I have to say I've always loved, you know, when you get into the car and you can just do whatever you want. So from my perspective, and don't tell the Dodge guys sometimes, but being able to do all the stuff that you can do in this, in some days it's you can turn everything off and you can just drive really fast and quiet and calm, or, you know, and then the next time you can turn that on and it's like you can turn the inside ambient to red and you can turn it on drag. You can drive down the street really loud. And, you know, I think the ability to be flexible with this car and to do all the things that you can, to me, is just one of the best things about
it. Can you control the interior sound independently of the exterior?
You cannot. But that has been some of the feedback that I think the cool thing about this is I think I see places where we can go in the future potentially and all of these different things. So I'm looking forward to maybe what comes next. We're not certain yet.
You see a potential for maybe offering, you know, different sound options that customers could download?
You know, that would be interesting. You know, I'm interested in learning and hearing what people's feedback is, because I think there's probably going to be a lot of discussion about that moving forward.
I would assume that, you know, over the course of this program, you know, you've probably been involved in some conversations with customers, you know,
we did do some research on it, yep.
What's been the feedback from them? You know, how do they feel about it? I mean, obviously, I think, you know, we've all heard, you know, there's a lot of people are not crazy about the idea of an electric replacement for the Hellcat, but what have you been hearing from owners?
It's really cool. Been truly, like, a lot of people have said the same thing. And when they see it online, when they hear the Fretsonic online, it is not the same thing as it is in person. And it's almost like 180 degrees. The skeptics that come and drive it, they're like, oh, wow. You know, I thought it would sound funny, but it sounds amazing in person. I wasn't certain how it would be, but I drove it and I love it. So the biggest thing that I'm getting back is, you know, this is very cool. This is doing a lot more than I thought it would, and it sounds so good in person.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about driving is when we're driving, we use all of our senses. Yeah. Maybe not taste, but, you know, I mean, our hearing, our vision, you know, touch, you know, through the pants, through the steering wheel. And, you know, that's one of the things about an internal combustion vehicle is there's so many different signals coming in. Obviously, sound is one of them. You know, another one, especially with the V8, you know, it's kind of that, it almost has a pulse to it, that vibration it's got. Was there ever any thought to maybe trying to replicate some of that, you know, to give that V8 pulse as part of it? Yeah.
Well, you know, with the Fretsonic sound system, we actually went and measured the sounds of, like, the turbine that was out there, a V8, right, a V6. Like, we went out and actually, like, looked at how the sounds of those, the decibel levels and where they come in at. And the Fretsonic actually ties that in to it.
Yeah, I mean, when it's sitting there idling, if you listen, you'll hear a pulse in the pulsing frequency in there. But what about, like, an actual, you know, a vibration?
Oh, you know, there's been discussions on it. At this point, obviously, it's not in the car. I don't know, you know, what we'll bring in next, but there's, you know, always options, but it's not there yet.
Okay. Well, anything else you want to share about the Charger?
You know, honestly, I think for me, this truly is something that is eye-opening, that I think people need to give it a second look, come out, you know, and give it a try and take a look at it. It will surprise everyone, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's something you do have to experience. You know, you set aside whatever preconceived notions you might have about EVs and actually experience this thing. And I think some people, if they really do that, I think they will come away surprised at their response to it.
I think so too. I truly love driving the car. I've been driving it for 3 months now, and that's the way I feel. I get back into my old internal combustion now, and I'm, you know, I want to go back to my BEV.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Yeah, I drive a lot of different things. Yeah, you know, and yeah, when I go from an EV to an internal combustion vehicle, and now it's like when I step on the accelerator, it's like, come on, let's go. Let's take it so long.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
It was so
pleasure to chat.
It was lovely to chat with you.
Picture this. You're in the garage, hands covered in grease, just finished tuning up your engine with a part you found on eBay, and you realize, you know what? I could also use new brakes. So where do you go next? Back to eBay. You can find anything there. It's unreal. Wipers, headlights, even cold air intakes, it's all there. And you've got eBay Guaranteed Fit. You order a part, and if it doesn't fit, send it back. Simple as that. Look, DIY fixes can be major. Doesn't matter if it's just maintenance or a major mod. You got it. Especially when things are guaranteed to fit. So when you dive into your next car project, start with eBay. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things people love.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.